Okay. So I borrowed from John Cage and the I Ching for the title. And first I will show that sand is everywhere and in all colors. And I fix those images on the web. So you have red sand, black sand, white sand, yellow sand, orange sand, pink sand, sand with water and clay in estuaries and sand on dunes. And you can see from the air in Nazca, sand on a project by Isamu Noguchi, who was planning to make a sculpture to be seen from Mars, which he did out of despair after the bombs were dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. We thought that mankind was reaching the end and we wanted to give a signal to other planets. And interestingly, NASA found that Mars responded with a face of Mars. And then we have also the image of dunes on Mars that we're getting now. And also we have sand on Earth, sand on which we can walk and sand with which we can have fun. And sand with which we can, you know, boil eggs and make funny patterns with pendulums and record lissajous curves. And this sand pendulum was very popular on the web because it was actually caught tracing an earthquake that occurred there, and everybody was sending that image. And then people started to build devices to play with sand, and one of the first one I know of was Osmo Valtonen in Finland, dragged a chain animated by a mechanical device to make lines in sand. And it got people interested, so in San Francisco the Exploratorium has a number of exhibits with sand, sand animated by wind or by water or by vibrations. And then it got to MIT, and I have found traces of a number of devices which were built. One of them is actually trying to dip into the sand. This one was made by a group of five students 3 or 4 years ago. Actually, they were inspired by my work, and they did something very coarse in a few hours with Epson printers. And they built something that was making actually traces, not in sand, but in chalk. And this is a sand printer. And this is something that won award in Austria, which is a sand tray on which video systems can project images. And then you have seen those images during the conference. I grabbed them on the KITP site, so you are the author of some of these. And some of them are simulations, the other are real sand. And then we have Faraday and Chladni patterns, and this, which I found interesting, with soft sand. But then for in many cultures, sand has had another dimension, which was about religion and mystical thoughts and meditations. So the Navajo Indians were actually and are making paintings with sand. And everybody knows about the Tibetan mandalas. Monks have been here and in Los Angeles and everywhere building those mandalas. Sanding colored sand in little tubes that they vibrate very accurately to make incredible images. And in Japan, in the Zen temples, people are using sand as a symbol of ephemerality, which is important in Buddhism. They build those sand structures out of wet sand, and as they dry, they crumble, and they have to be rebuilt almost every day. And they're also using sand as a symbol of quietness. And you all know the Zen gardens. They are not made of sand, they are made of gravel most of the time. And many of them include rocks. And they have really captured the imagination of many artists, of all the tourists who go to Japan, and the most celebrated has been the Ryuan-ji. Ryuan-ji is also the name of a series of drawings which John Cage made by placing stones on rock and circling every rock with a line. So there is a lot of documents on Ryuan-ji. And actually, this is this idea of the monks walking around rocks with a rake to draw a line in gravel that inspired me to do the work that is exhibited here, and which actually is not using gravel but sand because it's more easy and it's smaller. And instead of doing the lines on sand manually, I've been using a ball which is driven by a system of computer-controlled motors and magnet. I like the idea to actually just show the sand and to have the whole thing happen behind the scenes, so it has a kind of a magical aspect, and a lot of people who are not physicists or engineers are scratching their head and wondering how this can happen. And to me, it was not a big difference, because for many years I've been doing work on paper using lines which I define with software that I write to actually create geometries, and I render those geometries with pen and ink or pencil or brushes on paper. And at some point I wanted to have a wider media, and this is when I thought of sand. So for me, it was not a big adventure to go from art on paper to art on sand, but then it took a very different dimension, and I've been working on that for something like 5 or 6 years now. I did the first piece in 98, and I've been working on that ever since. So to create the patterns, I write little snippets of code in Mathematica or in Scheme or whatever language I can, and I output a series of coordinates, and I am dumb enough that instead of working in three dimension, I work in almost one dimension, because I can only work on line. I have thought of doing levitation with a ball, but this is too expensive, so I have just one line to work with. So I generally create spirals or meshes, and then I warp them and create different images. And what has interested me are several aspects of this work. One is that I like sand. I was born in Calais by the large beaches on the North Sea, and I've been immersed in sand from a very early age. And sand is beautiful. Sand has a quality of ephemerality, and I like the idea that every drawing that is done on the sand is actually destroyed to make another one, so it has a moving aspect to it. Something else which I like is that if I do a little polygonal spiral like this one with ink on paper, it's rather simple, and it gets a lot of richness as soon as I draw it in sand and light it, because then I get the effect of bas-relief and light and shadows, which make it a much richer image. No, I'm not good with that. So this is a little time-lapse animation that shows with a shorter span of time what is going on. And this was with the first device I built. It took an entire afternoon. And it took an entire afternoon to draw that, and at the end the sun is setting and it turns dark and I have to turn on the lights. It took something like 6 hours, because the system was really, really slow. So on the left side we have two photographs made in a Japanese garden, and this was made on the soft, on a very small tray that I have here. This is what it's all about. It's about quietness, stillness, and meditation. This is a small image done by architects at the Kasma Museum in Helsinki. This work was invited there for a show in 2000. The name of the show was Alien Intelligence, and they were showing something like 30 or 40 different kinetic pieces made with computers. And they found that my work was much quieter than anything else, so they built a little, very dark chapel. And the entrance was closed by thick blankets to isolate from the sound from the other exhibits. And it was very dark, and they were lighting the sound by very low grazing lights coming from optical fibers. And they had put wooden benches around around the sound tray. And some people were staying all afternoon there, just watching the ball. And a funny story was that when I first showed this piece publicly, it was in Los Angeles at SIGGRAPH in 99. And the organizers of SIGGRAPH were scared that people would play with the sound and steal the ball and the works and so forth. So the piece was enclosed in a kind of plexiglass, big box, and people were looking through. And it was visited by the curator of Kiasma, who invited the work and flew it to Helsinki, as well as myself, to get it to work. And then they discussed how the piece should be exhibited. And I said, well, last time it was exhibited, it was enclosed in a plexiglass wall. And they said, yes, but this was America. Here in Finland, nobody will ever touch it. And actually, it was displayed for 5 months. Little kids were around, and nobody ever dipped a finger in the sand. And when I brought it back to the United States, the first time I showed it, within 5 minutes, there was no plexiglass. People were playing with the rocks and the sand and the ball. So this was done with time-lapse photography a long time ago. And it gives a smoothness to the motion of the ball that is actually not real, and we will discuss that later. So here I will show a number of images on the right made on my sound trays, and then images either from nature or from other artists who have been dealing with sound. This is to illustrate the ephemerality of the work. Every time a piece is done, it can be wiped out, like the Dalai Lama is doing with the sound mandala. After they are done, they are destroyed and dispersed in water. So the ephemerality symbol is the same. Michael Eiter does traces on mud and dry sand and so forth in the desert. Robert Smithson is using sand and rocks to make spirals in nature. And I've been doing that on the sand as well. And I like the little image here, it comes from a doormat. Everybody knows Andy Goldsworthy's work. He's done very fascinating things, including with sand. He's just throwing it away and taking a picture of it. This is with a board, a dented board. And this is another animation from my sand tray. This you can see going back to the airport is a big roller. It's made of concrete and it has some shapes on it. And once in a while, it's being rolled on the Santa Monica Beach. It was done by Carl Chang. And this is sand work done by walking in circle on the wet sand next to the seaside by Richard Longman. So this is the time aspect of these animations, something which I have been interested in is that as I do those images, they take a lot of time, as you have seen. They take from anywhere from 10 minutes to 1 hour, and I have some patterns which take about an entire night. But some of them are very predictable, like this one. And I started to develop an interest on the aspect, the time aspect involved with drawing, either on sand or anything else. when you do a print, the print happen all at once on a device, on a laser printer or an inkjet printer. But when you draw, the line have a lens, and it takes time to actually create the lens everywhere. And over the last year, I have developed a relationship between drawing and time and music, and now I am using this device to actually create music. I'm working with a musician, and the geometrical information that the computer has to draw the motors, drive the magnet and draw the ball is sent at the same time to a synthesizer with composition rules, and it makes coordinated sound. And so this is a well-planned sand trace, and this is a poorly planned, very interesting sand trace. There is an artist in Chicago who works on snow fields, and he carries a bag that is filled with sand, and there is a little hole, and the bag shakes on his back while he walks, and he has a partner who is actually filming the scene and taking a note of the trace in the snow. So these are the four devices which I have built over the years. The first one was in 1998, and this one was in 1999. In 1999 it was wrapped in Japanese paper, and then a local friend started working with me to create these beautiful mahogany enclosures. And this is the smallest one, which is a desktop model, that the one that is exhibited here. So that's a close view of the large one. The large one is in my studio in Santa Barbara. If anyone is interested to see the large one, everybody is invited to come and see it. And with it, I can do much larger and more complex patterns that I can render effectively on the small one for considerations of size. What is interesting is that you see that the ball is rather large, and you have seen that it can etch in the sand a very, very thin line. And the reason why is that if the trajectory of the ball comes close to the previous one, then it fills back partially the previous one. So instead of being 1 inch or half an inch wide, it becomes just a few millimeters. So it's interesting to make thin line with a large device. I think I can make, it's about 2 millimeters. The sand, I generally have about 5 or 6 millimeters of sand. If I have less, it's less interesting because there are less details. And if I have more, very easily, I build little dunes and the ball gets stuck, and we'll talk about that. And probably I need your help to improve some of that. So actually, now I wanted to make some observations which I made in the course of the 5 or 6 years I've been doing that, or 7 years actually. The first one is a story that's also related with my trip to Helsinki. When I first did this piece, actually I did not know that it could actually work. So I made an experiment. I grabbed some sand and put it in a plastic tub and add a magnet, and found that actually I could move the ball, you know, through the bottom of the tub. And so I took for granted that it would always work. So I started building the first device and it worked, and then I built the second one and it worked. And it worked because we were just buying sand at the right place. And the sand was okay. And when we shipped the large piece to Helsinki, the show was funded by Nokia, so there was a lot of money available. So the plane ticket for the piece was $5,000. But it was cheap enough that they said, well, we have sand in Finland, so you don't need to come with sand, we'll provide you with sand. So I flew there and we installed the work, and after putting everything back together, the last thing was to place the sand on the tree and get started. So the curator of the museum took me in his car and took me to his sand place. We bought a big bag of sand and we put the sand on the tree, and nothing worked because the sand was very different. All the particles were interlocked and were providing a barrier that the ball could not pass through. So we went to a second place, a third place, a fourth place. Every place was selling the same kind of sand. And I realized that probably all this sand was made by crushing material, and it was not natural sand resulting from erosion. So I asked for some of that and told them, well, that must be easy. We are next to the Baltic, you have beaches, so I need beach sand. For some reason, they could not get me beach sand, but one of the museum docents had a garden, started to dig in his garden, and found a layer of sand, filled a box with it, and the sand worked. So this is so this is how I realized that there is sand and sand. And after that, actually after going to Finland, I've been using red sand from Sedona, which was brought to me by a friend. But this is not a picture of that. This is a forgery. Actually, this was normal sand, and it was lit with the morning light. It was very blue for the digital camera. So normally, this is black. This is rather bluish, almost like that, and I inverted it. This is why the shadow of the ball is clearer than what it should be. I could not find a picture with a Sedona sand. So coming back from Helsinki, there was snow everywhere because we started the exhibit in January. And I wanted to try to have something white to change my sand. So I put together a layer of sand and a layer of white flour. My wife bakes our bread, so we have plenty of flour. So I decided it would be very interesting. Actually, it was a catastrophe, as you can see. It made crust and blobs and exploded all over the place. But what was interesting is that I persisted, and after half a day, all the flour was incorporated in the sand, and it made a very nice shine of white in some places. And I tried to have pulverulent material. I tried, for instance, sugar, just flour, and it never works because the ball tries to make its way through the sand, and then at some point the whole thing explodes and the ball jumps by half an inch and is blocked again. And we'll see that happen also in sand, but there is something that doesn't work at all with powders for me. The next thing I want to show is actually this. The top image was made by making curved lines using very short segments. And the way my motors are controlled, I give the next vertex at each time, and there is a communication lag. So once the ball gets to the point, the motor stops, wait for the next instruction. And so if the segments are very short, the ball stops, and the way I take the photograph with a very long exposure, you see the reflection, the light reflected by the ball make all those little dots. And in between, you have a thin line which shows the complete trajectory. So here, I had something like 30 or 40 stops. You see why you have 30 or 40 little light images. But here, it's different. This is a spiral. The spiral is generated by segments which are probably 10 centimeters long. So here, when I take a pause, the ball is actually caught as being a series of little ghosts. And the reason is that it has a jerky motion when it moves through the sand, which means that even if there is no interruption for the communication between the computer and the motors, the resistance of the sand is creating this jerky motion. And this is shown even better in this image, where the effect of these stop and relaxation are shown on the side of the trace, and are shown also by the long exposure, by the reflection of the light. So what appears to be from a distance a smooth trajectory is not smooth at all, actually. And probably you know a lot about that. And following the same principle, I took this image with a very long pause, something like 30 or 40 seconds, with very low light. And here, the pattern asks for very long trajectories between the vertices. And so this takes about 10 seconds or more. There is a stop here where you have a bigger light dot because the ball stopped for quite a while, say a tenth of a second or half that. But here you have the normal trajectory, and you see how jerky it is because the ball stops and go, and you have this little dotted line of light. And then another thing which I have observed is that in certain patterns, my sand segregate, which means that after this is normally a squared spiral. The ball starts at the outside and then goes inward to the center. And the magnet here takes a sharp angle, but the magnet is about 1 inch in diameter, and the ball is about 1 inch in diameter. So there is a loose coupling in position between the magnet and the ball. So instead of taking a sharp corner, the ball takes this strange curve, which I have not analyzed in detail. But what is very interesting is that at the exit of the turn, larger particles segregate in line. They are made from shell debris and bigger, darker particles, and I've been able to see that, but not really to understand it. So probably you also have answers for me for that. And well, that is one aspect of it, it's being destroyed by the wind. Well, that's my talk. Okay.
Are there any questions?
With all the experience that you have now, when you program the magnet to drive the ball, does it come out as you imagine, or does it require a lot of times and trials and errors?
Oh, no, it comes out easily. But I have had a lot of experience to program patterns. I've been doing that for 25 years, so the sand has been something more recent. And what I am doing on sand is much simpler and shorter in complexity and time and work than what I was doing on paper. So for me, it's very relaxing to do that. The only sand that I had from the desert was coming from Sedona. Is that the Painted Desert? I don't know what the Painted Desert is. Yes. No, I had some sand from Sedona in Arizona, but not from this desert. I'm sorry. I have to go there and take some, but I'm not sure I can. Maybe it's not allowed.
Denise.
No, actually, we've been talking about that. And actually, that has been a project of mine, but actually, I discussed that. I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. And actually, what I would like to do is to be able to work with a blend of two different glass beads with different colors and different sizes to actually work more on this idea of separation. And I think that if I could have white and black sand, or white and red, or black and red, and blend them, I think it would do something very nice.
They call them art sand. They sell them as art sand, but they're really glass beads. Well, M&Ms, you know, available in many different colors. They sell.
Well, everyone can send me a couple of pounds of glass beads, and I will use them and send to the images.
You mentioned that the sort of the fundamental object that you work with is the line, and you showed the comparison between the line in two dimensions versus the structure that arises, almost a sculpture-like quality that arises in the sand. Have you been able to reflect on or spend some time reflecting on why there's something just so much more soothing about the structure that arises out of the when you bring that extra dimension in and you bring the line up out?
Yes, actually, and I started thinking about that before using the sand, so maybe that's out of topic, but I will still answer your question. Actually, I found the idea of folding paper in complex patterns very interesting, and I made experiences making foldings and pressing paper to create, in French we call that chevron, which are geometries, chevrons? Okay, to create chevrons out of paper, and once they are folded, you have this sheet of white paper with the folds, and it does incredible things with light. At some point I thought it would be interesting to do something like a sundial with it, because it takes light very differently as the source moves, and for some reason it seemed to be concentrating light at the bottom of the grooves. So it really gives to that object a very beautiful quality. And actually, after discovering that, what I did was to find someone who had a computer-controlled router, and I took some boards of maple and had those grooves actually routed into the wood so that I could use this in a studio, in a local studio, with Richard Tullis, to actually emboss paper exactly in that same shape. And I have made a few pieces which so are paper bas-relief, and which actually show the three-dimensionality, and I think they are really wonderful. What was interesting on those pieces too was that as they had been embossed from wood on a very powerful press, then it was the paper, the embossed paper, not only carried the shape of the geometry that I had created, but also all the hardwood veins that were there. So it has a very nice texture. So this I was interested in very much, and this has been one of the rewarding side of working in the sand. And I think the reason why it's really pleasant is that it brings this extra richness. One of the bad things that happens now, more and more digital art is being created. And digital art, you know, just brushes a few droplets of ink on paper. It's very dull, it's very flat. And our memory, if we love art, if we have been in museum, is actually has been captured, and our taste has been captured by all the classical art which exists in stone, which exists on paper, all the beautiful engravings from Durer and so forth. And they have a richness that our senses, our eye, our vision are used to that. And when we see the dull, dry stuff from the digital printer, we do not like it. When we see something which is as rich as a line traced with a finger in the sand, then we are moved. There is something which I think has to deal with bandwidth and communication and so on and so forth. But I think it's much more interesting. This is why I've always used computers to create art, but I have never wanted to do digital prints. I've always tried to get to the traditional digital, non-digital mediums that were used before. So I have tried many ways of doing that. I've even used silver rods to do what Durer was doing, making a silver point drawing on prepared paper. And nobody has ever done that, but I think it makes digital art real and interesting.
You've been sitting here for 2 days.
Yes.
Can you comment on our way of thinking about these problems?
Well, I think to me it's very interesting. I am a kind of an odd person here. I've been sitting in almost all the conferences from the Patton Group 2 years ago, and then in many conferences about string. And I can only capture a few percent of what is being said, but this percent or 5% or 10% is very important to me. It has resulted for me in a different way of looking at things. I was always interested in physics from a distance. I was reading Scientific American, and when I was directed to engineering, unfortunately, which never interested me, but I almost dropped out, and I was reading books that I have seen now on the shelves of David Bose, like The Morse and Feshbach. I was always interested in mathematics. So I feel at home here, although a lot of things are just passing over my head. I've never been an experimenter, really, and this is the most thing I've been able to do with my own hands.
Okay, well, let's thank Paul Pierre again.